Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast, the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Rurink. Our special guest this week, Rebecca Bahar Cook. A little later, we've got some audio with Dana Nessel, the state's attorney general. And also, the answer to the question, is just us, or is the legislature moving very slowly this term? We asked Mike Shirky that question, and you're going to want to hear his answer, because it sounds better in audio than actually just writing it out. In the newsletter, you'll find out what I mean a little bit later. John is dressed already for the big week coming up, and it is walleye catching season, John.
That's right. It's the height of the walleye season on the Detroit River, and a lot of people don't realize that we are blessed in Michigan to have one of the finest walleye fisheries in the world in that stretch of the Detroit River that goes between Lake St. Clair and Lake Erie. We're lucky, let's put it that way. And I'm going to go take advantage of that geography luck that we've had.
Now, what happens if you go over into Canada? Does somebody, like, catch you if you, like, just kind of veer over into the Canadian shore?
There's actually an invisible boundary line right down the middle of the Detroit River, and I actually usually get a Canadian license as well as a Michigan license. So if you do cross over, you're okay. Canadians are all right with Michiganders fishing their waters, and Michiganders are all right with Canadians fishing our waters, as long as they're licensed.
What kind of boat traffic's on the Detroit River when you're out there fishing?
There's anywhere between 1,000 and 3,000 boats on that river in a given day.
So you see all sorts of things out there.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of fun. And if you're lucky, you might even catch something like a sturgeon or...
How about a tire?
I've never caught a tire. I've caught a pair of pantyhose. I've caught a sock. So there's other stuff in that river, but
I'm quite sure. But the walleye's good. I will attest to that. And John hooked me up on Christmas with some of that, and it's good stuff. So Rebecca was learning about walleye. This is something I learned today, Rebecca. Did you know that people with blue eyes can be more light sensitive than folks who do not have blue eyes?
I did know that, actually.
Am I the last to know this? Lisa knew that too. And you don't even have blue eyes.
I don't, but it's that whole, you know, Nordic, blonde, blue-eyed, sensitive to the sun thing.
Just the things you learn. I just learned that today. And I thought it was just me that I was light sensitive, and now I know why. Good things to know. All right, well, let's look. I want to find out more things I didn't know before, and one of them is planning for an inaugural, because, Rebecca, you were in charge of this year's inaugural with Governor Whitmer. But first, why don't you give some background to our listeners about what you do for a living and how you came to that job.
Yeah, so I'm the CEO of Capital Fundraising Associates. We primarily raise money or teach nonprofits how to raise more money from the corporate community and philanthropic community in the state. Clients all over the state doing all sorts of great human service work. But I started my career doing political fundraising, and so a lot of our nonprofit clients have somewhat of a political bent. Done work with the Michigan Political Leadership Program at MSU, done work with the Michigan Historical Society, Political Historical Society. And I kind of have my fingers into some fundraising for elected officials. Luckily for me, I was not asked to do the fundraising for the inaugural. That was done by Cheryl Bergman and her team. But because of the relationship I've had with some of those folks, and Cheryl and I go back many, many years, she asked me if I'd be willing to help coordinate the swearing-in ceremony for the governor and the lieutenant governor and all the statewide office holders.
And you were on the Ingham County Board of Commissioners for a spell as well. And
11 years.
Wow. How about that? And you were able to pry your way away from that and give it to our friend down around the corner.
I loved serving. I think I did a really good job for the constituents of Ingham County that I represented in the city of Lansing. But there comes a time when you realize that your energies could be used differently and you want to give someone else an opportunity to serve. And both those things for me were a delight to do and a delight to walk away from.
I'm sure. So how did you get into doing the inaugural?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that I had just done the inauguration for Mayor Shore in Lansing the year before. So, you know, I joke that they looked around and said, who's the last person who did this? And they were like, oh, Rebecca. But I did work for the Granholm inaugural committee when she was sworn in the second time. So I had been through it before. I knew what was involved, and I had just done one exactly 365 days earlier for Andy. So I think those things made me attractive.
This is something that is, I got to believe, very complex. And you have to do it in a very small amount of time because you can't start planning this thing before Election Day, really, can you?
No, you cannot. It would be ridiculous to even try. And so I think they called me a couple weeks after the election, and we started right around November 15th, 16th, and January 1 is January 1, so that's the time frame you have to work. And it is a lot of coordination. I brought my list here so I wouldn't forget anybody, but it was coordinating with Capitol Police, MSP Security, the City of Lansing, Parks and Rec, the Public Service Department for the city, Detroit Public Television, Lansing Emergency Management, the Lansing Fire Department, the Lansing Police Department, the Governor's Detail, the Michigan Army National Guard, Michigan Association of Broadcasters was fantastic partners in terms of letting people see it, the Michigan State Capitol Commission, Capitol Facilities, the state courts, the state police, I think I said, and then their production company. And of course, I cannot not thank the State of Michigan Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, who pulled a lot of heavy lifting for me, and DTMB.
So who's the first call you make? So the the first call that you make after you've agreed to do this is to whom?
You guys see me for a month and a half?
Yeah, here's another Christmas we don't get to celebrate, yeah. So actually, the first call that I made was to some of my friends on the Republican side of things have planned these before. So Deb Muchmore, Anne Mervin, Susie Avery were three women I know who had been involved in the Snyder and Engler inaugurations, and they were very, very kind to me in terms of giving me an outline of, you know, things to look out for, things to be careful about, things to stay away from. And then it was...
Wait, before you do that, so what were some of the things they told you to stay away from and not to do?
Not to go too far away from tradition, that there is sort of a protocol involved in these events, and you certainly don't want to kick off the governor's administration by making a major faux pas. So that was one of the major things. Be cautious, you know, be aware of the budget. It can very, very, very quickly run away from you, and just sort of stay organized. And so that was fantastic. Just even having a copy of what the dais seating looked like 4 years ago was helpful in terms of knowing who needed to be invited.
What is an inaugural cost? I mean, what is it? We're just talking the swearing in? Are we talking about the ball? Are we talking about the whole?
So I just did the swearing in. The inauguration, the ball, the winter warm-ups that she did all over the state, those were all separate activities from what I was in charge of. And just popped open the MSP bill that got forwarded to me. You know, that was $50,000 for all the overtime and stuff. There, you know, the building of the stage and all the audio video was a couple $100,000. It's not a cheap endeavor.
So does the incoming governor have to raise all that?
Yes.
So none of that comes out of the state's capital budget? Because I always assume the carpenters went out there and they built it and it was part of their budget.
Yeah, so did I. Not the case. Now, I will say, you know, the broadcasters volunteered and in-kinded all of their time. Detroit Public Television did the same. City of Lansing, their team was great to work with and sort of waived some fees for us in terms of, you know, renting parking structures, right? We could have asked them to have a physical person there to monitor traffic coming in and out. We chose not to, and they chose not to charge for parking that day because it was a holiday. So, but they could have, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, renting the porta potties and getting all the chairs. And
what was her budget then for that?
I don't know what the total budget was. She never shared the total number with us, but, you know, it was a couple $1 million at least, if not more.
All right, so after you got kind of the law enforcement aspects taken care of, and just taking a quick look at here, obviously the details got to be involved, but what about City of Lansing Parks and Rec? What did they do?
They were very, very great about roping off parking, making sure that, I don't know if you all remember, but there was a lot of work being done on Capitol Avenue, I think from Board of Water and Light.
Oh,
they had everything torn up, so making sure all of that was cleaned up and there weren't all the trucks out there, and it was a big muddy mess, and they laid out boards for us, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it was kind of a muddy mess out there. Okay, so they were in charge of that. So after you get kind of this security stuff taken care of, then what do you got to do?
I, because I'm crazy, pulled all the inaugurals. I got Romney 65, Blanchard 83, Blanchard 87, Engler 99, Graham Holm 2003, Snyder 11, and Snyder 15. And I literally made a spreadsheet of everything that took place on the dais that morning so that I could take a look at that protocol stuff. Like, for example,
wait a minute. Where do you get something like this? How do you know what Romney did in 63?
Archives.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Way. Absolutely, archives.
Send your intern Ben to do that, or what?
We were very helpful. A friend of the campaign is a librarian, and she did some research for us. I personally got a hold of Blanchard and asked him to forward me what he had. Again, Anne Mervin and Susie Avery had the Engler and Snyder information, and then having worked on one of the Grand Hall inaugurals, I had that one.
Wow.
So really, it was a labor of love, and thank God I worked so well with all these Republicans because they were very, very good to me.
Has there been much variation?
No, not really.
Pretty consistent.
A couple of things happened this time that had never happened before, primarily letting the Attorney General, Secretary of State, and Lieutenant Governor make remarks. That had not been done before, and allowing them to choose who was the person who swore them in. That was also something that was new to this inaugural that we hadn't seen before. The other piece that we added, and this was a challenge, the governor wanted to see a diverse Michigan audience. And it's hard to make people come to the Capitol on January 1st. You don't know if it's going to snow. You don't know if it's going to rain. You don't know who's going to show up.
Who partied too hard the night before?
Who partied too hard, yeah, exactly. So trying to figure out how do we represent the diversity of the people of Michigan was something that spent a lot of time trying to figure out, and eventually came up with inviting the tribal nations to present their flags. And then we did a parade of flags with high school students and volunteers who carried the, I think it was 72 flags representing the majority nations where other people have come from before landing in Michigan. So, ordering 60 flags and finding flagpoles and volunteers and, just some fun stuff.
All right. So before I interrupted you, you put together this amazing spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And so then where did you go from there?
So once we put the spreadsheet together and we saw what had been done in the past, we took the logistical piece of it, which are all those departments together, and we called a meeting in the Capitol to talk about what was done in years past, where we were looking, what the vision looked like, and kind of figure out. Because I didn't know when I started, I knew that Michigan Supreme Court was involved somehow, didn't really understand that it was the Chief Justice who did a majority of the swearing in, so coordinating schedules and making sure that their security people were comfortable, making sure that Viviano felt comfortable with the pieces that he was given, sort of drafting out scripts for people, finding out who did what was sort of the first thing we did by holding a meeting. And I think we had three meetings of this main group to kind of go through, okay, what needs to be done? The second meeting was, are there any problems with the planning? And then the third meeting was, we've all done it, right?
We're okay, right?
No one's doing it, right? Yeah. It was 30, 40, 50 people in the room.
Wow.
To go over all those different details. And I have to really, really, really thank Veterans Affairs and the Army National Guard, who carried a bulk of it. I mean, a lot of the protocol that's involved is them. So, they're always the band concert. They always do the music. Things like that made it easy for us, right?
So they fire the cannons, too.
They fire the cannons, and they do the flyover.
Yeah, talk about the flyover. How does that all work?
That is a process. So the very first meeting, right, asking the National Guard, what do we need to do to get the flyover? Well, first you need to get permission from DOD. So that is
DOD.
Department of Defense.
Oh.
So that is a form that, I filled out and submitted, letting them know why we wanted it. Simply doing it for ceremonial events is frowned upon. So then coordinating with the National Guard to see if there's some training mission that could be done with that, so that it's not just a flyover, that there's actual some benefit to the National Guard for us wanting to do this. And unfortunately, we weren't able to get the big planes that we wanted because the day after the inaugural, they were being flown out for a mission, so they had to fill the tanks, and it would have been too heavy to do the takeoff and the landing from where we wanted. So then it was, do we want the helicopters? Do we want MSP to do the helicopters? Do we want the Army National Guard to do the helicopters? nice little negotiation there to figure out, you know, what was the most economical way for us to do it and who could plan that, that training mission around it so that it wasn't a cost to the...
So it was Apaches, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
yeah.
And so who ended up flying the things over?
It ended up being the Army National Guard.
Okay, and there was, how many were there, two or three?
I think there were two.
Yeah, and so how does that timing work? Because
well,
I know
we're all
that.
Mic'd up. We all have our that was the one thing I think if you watch it, there was to me a very, very long delay. I think it was just over a minute, and that was partly because of the cannons going off when they did in the smoke. Mm. So you want to have that clear a little bit before they fly over. But we were all mic'd up, and we had the cues all set. So the production team was really great. PM1 Productions. Making sure that we were all communicating internally.
Talk a little bit about the cannons, because there's a protocol to how many cannons a governor gets and how many cannons somebody else gets.
But here, a 19-gun salute is for the governor, 21 is for a president, and I think 20 is a vice president.
Now, that's something new.
A lot of people don't think about that, but it's interesting, because I thought about the first inaugural I covered, I'm like, why do these keep going off? And then I started doing some research, and it's like,
they get 19 guns. Yeah, and I think that was one of the, you know, only I would know, but the broadcasters called it a 21-gun salute when it was a 19-gun salute. You know, little things like that. But, you know, again, all of it's protocol, so being able to have the research and taking a look at, you know, who posted the colors, how many, you know, what music was played, right? Because that's another thing, too, when you've got that, do you swear, I swear, and then there's the music, and there's been variations of that over time. So, you know, close to the end of the planning period, have some FaceTime with the governor, and it was like, well, do you like, you know, ruffles and flourishes? It's literally 7 notes long. You wanted to play it 3 times, 4 times, 8 times, what do you want, you know? And she's got a sort of transition team to put together and government to organize. And it's like, hey, do you like the colors? You know, whatever.
She's just like, whatever.
Yeah, exactly, at that point, you know.
Whatever, Rebecca.
Yeah, right. Like, I'm just happy I don't have to put 2 cents of time into this because you're doing it. So,
one of the other things that I didn't know is that the judges that swear people in, that they can't be federal judges. They have to be state judges. Is that right?
That is right. So there were a couple federal judges that you saw on the dais who administered the oath, but those folks, I think it was Secretary of State and the Attorney General, they had an official swearing in that was legal without a federal judge right before they went out to the dais, and then they had the ceremonial swearing in.
So they actually were sworn into office before everybody else, before everything happened.
It's really just a piece of paper that needs to be signed, notarized, and delivered to the oath of office. Mm. You know, you can do it at any time after being sworn in.
Hmm. Oh, that's interesting. The most stressful part of January 1, 2019 for you was?
Whew. Well, I think it was more stressful the night before.
Okay. All right.
Just doing all the last minute seating and the dais seating was tough, right? That's where you can really sort of make people upset by omitting somebody or adding somebody who shouldn't be there. You know, there's a limited amount of space. Everybody wants to have, you know, people that are close to them up there. So that was a little harrowing, and I think at 9:15 the night before, when everything is loaded into the teleprompter, all of the introductions have been sent in terms of you're introducing this person, and all the speeches have been written, and all the TikTok, and then it's for someone to say, "Hi, you know, I might not be able to make it. Something's come up," and you're like, "I can't pull it off the teleprompter." So, you know, stuff like that probably nobody thinks of behind the scenes. I did sleep. Yes, I did sleep.
Probably, 2 hours?
I think at about midnight, I turned off the computer and said, if I don't get a minimum of 4 hours of sleep, it's going to be a nightmare for everybody who has to work with me tomorrow.
And how long did you sleep in on the second?
I actually went to the ball, and so I was up late, and I think we asked for a late checkout, and I'm a morning person, so I was still probably up by 9 or 10
were you
o'clock.
Slap happy by the ball?
Oh, I was definitely slap happy. It was hard to get ready. I was exhausted. I mean, slap happy and exhausted. It's a special kind of personality that can put all these people together and not have them at each other's throats at the end of it. And I think that's probably also a reason why I was chosen to do this. You know, I'm very good at motivating people to do what they said they wanted to do. I mean, that's the whole crux of what Capital Fundraising Associates does. So, you know, I call them gentle reminders. Other people may call it pestering. But we do a really, really good job just making sure everybody's clear of who's doing what the expectations are, and when they need to be done by. So, it, you know, everything ran pretty smoothly.
Well, how big was the team then?
The actual ceremony itself, it was me and primarily Kelsey Tabor, who works for me in my office, Mark Barron from PM1 Productions, and Tom Kerr. We sort of put it all together. Tom and PM1 Productions were responsible for the staging, all the audio video, the teleprompting, all of that piece. But in terms of the organization and details and corralling the troops, that was me.
Was there a backup plan if the weather got too hairy?
Yes. And the only people, only folks that she would allow to make that decision was the state police. So if at any time they said the weather was too inclement or it would be dangerous, then the plan was to go into the Capitol, and we had approval from the House to be able to use the House chambers.
Okay. And what would be inclement? Would that be like negative, anything under zero?
Anything that was life-threatening. The governor, God bless her, wanted to be outside no matter what. So rain, snow, hail even, we knew we would be outside. It would just be if it would risk human life that we would have gone inside.
How many people were up on that dais?
100 and something. Okay. Just over 100, 300, 400, not including the National Guard holding the flags.
And who got a hold of Granholm and Engler? And that was you.
Oh, yeah. That was fun. We did all of that. We did, my office did all of the coordination with folks on the dais to make sure that they could be there, and then worked with them if they had any kind of speaking role to make sure that they knew what that was. I read all the speeches ahead of time to make sure that they were the proper length. Edited a couple that needed to be, my suggested edits, right? And then just also taking a look for tone. We wanted to make sure that we were representing all of the people of Michigan, those, who had supported her and those who hadn't. So making sure that anybody up there was being as inclusive and welcoming as possible.
Last question here. Any other funny story or memorable story from this whole adventure that you think would be, that you'd have to share to kind of remember this whole event?
I don't know that I could pick out one. I mean, I think one of the probably funny things for me was, so it's the morning of, and for me, the dais seating, I had been told from folks who had done it earlier, including, I should point out, Evie Zoyce, who was responsible for the seating piece for Snyder, that it was going to be a nightmare and it was going to be disorganized. And no matter what I did, something would go wrong. And I heard that from MVA as well. So I had laminated pieces of paper that had everybody's name who was supposed to be on the dais, took that, the gummy stuff that you can peel up and down, that you stick posters on the wall, put them all on the floor of the rotunda so everybody would know exactly where they needed to stand and get on up there. And despite all my best efforts, the program has started, and we are four chairs shy for some of Governor Whitmer's family, because four people who were not supposed to be on the dais stood on name plates and walked on in there. So that was probably, probably the piece of it that caused me the most amount of panic is, it's on. Cameras are on, and I'm on the back pulling chairs out of the audience to get one row in the back four people that snuck in. So,
You couldn't just yank those four people off?
I suppose I could have, but not knowing who they were and not wanting to cause a scene, it was just easier to put four more chairs on the back of the room.
Oh, my gosh. Have you gone back in time to figure out who those were?
Yes, and I'd rather not say.
Oh, that's going to be the Rebecca Bahar Cook tells all.
That's the book she comes out when she retires.
Yeah, right. That will be the book when she retires.
These four people.
I loved every minute of it. If there was one thing that I wish we could have accommodated better was all the people who wanted to have a role. It's hard for me to say, no, I'm sorry, we can't do that. And I had to do that a lot. Mm-hmm. It's also, especially some of the seating for the VIPs. You know, everyone, it took a village to get her there. It took a village to get the other elected officials there. And, you know, everybody wants to sort of be able to give something special to the folks that helped get them there. And it was hard to say to folks, I'm sorry, you have four seats in VIP and, you know, bring your own chairs. You can tell your friends if they want to come. But
would you do it again?
Oh, yes. I mean, I did it for Andy, and the mayor was great, and he was a joy to work with. This was, of course, 10 times that. But I think now that I've done it once, you know, like it would be a little bit easier. And quite frankly, it was really fun to see my little touches in the program, right? Little things like the Parade of Nations, right? That was something that I totally dreamt up and sold and got to do. And I think it was a wonderful thing. So that was fun. Yeah, I would do it again.
Well, that was great stuff, though, for the inaugural. And then Mother Nature worked out for you. It was a great day, a great event, and definitely something to be proud of in the state. Thanks you for all the effort that you put into that. Rebecca Bauer Cook, thank you for joining us for this section of the podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you for asking us.
Attorney General, thanks for taking some time with us here today. You've been in office now for 3.5 months. Has it been as busy as you thought that it was going to be?
It's been more busy. Yes. Well, you know, the office handles some 37,000 cases, our office touches. And, you know, there are so many cases that are, frankly, any one of which would be some of the biggest cases that our state has ever had. But we have, you know, it seems like to be a dozen of them. I mean, I could go on and there's the Flint cases, the unemployment insurance agency cases, there's the Doe cases that involve the MDOC. I mean, there's so many other cases in addition to that that are major monumental cases that may end up being bigger than any case in history, each one of them, you know, and there's multiple. So we've had a lot to do. And obviously, you know, I've been interested in sort of restructuring the office a little bit. I have a number of priorities that I wanted to put into place, and that involves a lot of our new units that we've talked about and getting those off the ground. And so, yeah, I think the way the governor phrases it is drinking from a fire hose all day, every day, and I feel like it's the same thing for us over at the Department of Attorney General.
Is it what you thought it was going to be?
I think so. I don't know how to answer that. I thought it would be very busy, and I thought there'd be a lot to do. And there is. But I will say, in terms of expectations, you know, this is an office, obviously, that, you know, I'm the first Democrat in over 16 years to hold that office. And I didn't know what to expect coming into an office that was full of, you know, people who had civil service, and not being able to bring very many of my own people in and sort of inheriting this office of hires over the course of 16 years. And I didn't know how that receptive they would be to me personally. But I have been amazed at the quality of the staff there, the, you know, the workload that the attorneys have, and their experience. I mean, these are honestly some of the best attorneys that I have ever worked with or against in my entire career. And I have a whole staff of them. And it's really exciting because these are folks, they're just dedicated civil servants. They just want to go out and they want to assist the public every day. And that's what they work their hardest to do. And it's been a wonderful experience working with them.
You know, I was really struck by listening to your comments at the Planned Parenthood Forum on the promotions of the women that you've had in your office. Talk about that and why that's been a priority.
Well, I was critical of this during the course of my campaign. But, you know, you don't know really what to expect until you get there. And I haven't worked at the AG's office before. And I'm used to working in an office that's very diverse. I come from Wayne County, which has a very diverse population, and that was reflected in the government offices. So I was a little surprised when I got there and saw how few women were in positions of power and how there were virtually no people of color in any positions of authority. And, you know, one of the things I promised during the course of my campaign is that we would have greater diversity. Now, I didn't promote people or hire people based on their gender or based on their race or any of those considerations. I just hired the best people I could. But that included a lot of women, fortunately. And so, you know, we are making an effort to sort of balance out the staff. I mean, you know, over 50% of the people who are in law school are women. So it's strange to me to have so few women in positions of authority. So, you know, we still only have about a third of the office where we have women in positions of you know, who are division heads or bureau chiefs or anything of that nature. In fact, I don't think any of our bureau chiefs are women. They're all men. Certainly, you know, I welcome the great work by the many men who work in that office. But, you know, do I expect that over the course of my term, things will be a little bit more balanced whenever it is that I leave? I do.
Did you think you were going to get as many quotes of the day from MERS as you've gotten so far as Attorney General?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I'm arm wrestling with Jeremy Moss every day. And, you know what? I guess we have a little competition going at this point. But and Jeremy's a funny guy. So, you know, I think that what my reputation has always been and continues to be, and this can be phrased as articulately or you know, or differently as you want, but I'm sort of a person who just says what they mean and means what I say, and I like to be as honest with people as possible. And in a way, I guess that's translated into some good quotes.
I was on a radio show this morning that one of your favorite radio hosts, I'm sure, in town, and one of the questions he asked me is, does she have a filter? And I said, I hope not, because I like getting these quotes of the day.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to be as honest as I can with people. Some people appreciate that more than others, but, you know, that's what you're always going to get with me, is as much honesty as I can possibly provide so that people know what's going on in their government. I think it's very important, and I've just been so tired. You know, as you know, Kyle, I'm not a seasoned politician. This is the first time I've held any kind of elected office. One of the things that has bothered me as somebody who's watched politicians my entire career is I hate listening to politicians dance around and around and around an issue, and then they never really answer it. And so my training as a trial attorney is that when the judge asks you a question, you answer that question. You don't answer some other question that nobody ever asked you. And so maybe it's been a little difficult for me to transition into that, but I don't want to fully transition to that. I want to be transparent, and I want the public to know what's going on in this office. You know, this is their office. This is the office of the people. I'm supposed to be the people's attorney, and I want them to know what we're doing.
Attorney General Dana Nessel, thank you for the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Okay, now we're going to move into an interview that Jack had with the rest of the reporters with Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey. This is just one question, and we wanted you to hear the way he answered the question. We'll listen to that now.
Things are going a little bit slower because you have so many new people, et cetera, as far as just plain really getting going on, and plus some really major issues that you're trying to tackle as well.
I think the pace is just about perfect, Jack.
You know, how do we write
I'm
that?
I'm new in this job, and I'm just learning it.
Yeah, you got a couple extra spaces in there.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to Rebecca Bahar Cook for coming in, Kelly Rossman McKinney for getting us the interview with Dana Nessel, and of course the Attorney General for her time. And Jacob, we know that today is Earth Day, but maybe more importantly, today is the day that the wings have been extended and the DEQ is now
Eagle.
And you say it so majestically and so beautifully.
Well, when has an eagle ever not been majestic, Kyle? I mean, it's the national bird. What would speak more to conservation of our natural resources than to name our department after the great eagle?
I can't think of anything else. I mean, I wonder if people are going to now not hate the department as much as they have, because you can't really hate an eagle.
Yeah, of course not. Now, this is actually more interesting. I heard you exclaim the other day when we got the press release that Eagle would take effect on Earth Day. But that would have never happened under the original executive order.
So this is almost a blessing in disguise that the Republicans canned their first executive order.
Yeah, who knew the Republicans would push the DEQ renaming to a point where Whitmer would have to issue a new executive order that would land precisely well, right before Earth Day.
This is beautiful. And I love how you use the analogy, or you use the verb land, too. It makes it even better.
I didn't mean to, but this is great. We're looking forward to making lots of eagle references in our headlines for the next at least 4 years.
I just want to close my eyes right now and just tune out to this Steve Miller song and just embrace the new department name right now. So for Jacob Kanzler and John Rurink, who's out fishing in the Detroit River, thank you to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. And the person who's calling right as I'm closing out, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.